act of idolatry. Here on Daf Lamed Vav Amud Beis, the Gemara gives a different reason for the prohibition against wine, but lumps it together with a whole lot of other prohibitions. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. A little bit higher, excuse me. Gufa. Amar Bali Amar Rav Imai. Rav Imai Notam Hashem Dorav Pitan. Dorav. Pitan V'shamnam V'ed of an Anju V'shamnam, the oil of an Anju, the Yenam, and the wine of an Anju, Uvenotehem, and sexual contact with a non-Jewish woman, Kulam Mishnei Asadavai. And if we look a little bit further down, Amor Avad Amor Yitzchak Azu Al Pitan Mishum Shamnan, my Umar the Shemen Mipat, El Al Pitan the Shamnan Mishum Yenam. They prohibited eating the bread or the oil of a non-Jew because of the prohibition of wine, Va'al Yain Al Yenam Mishum Venotehem. And the prohibition of wine, it was because of social intercourse with non-Jewish girls. So the prohibition against wine in this particular case was the one that Aviva mentioned last week, which was that because it will lead to sexual congress with a non-Jewish woman, or social intercourse in the form of drinking wine with non-Jews, this would be prohibited because you want to separate the Jews from the non-Jews because you're worried about intermarriage and things of this nature.
Yeah, I would agree if you just buy the wine from the guy and bring it to your house.
Okay. Well, but that's... So there are two things that we should say about this. The first thing is that this Gemara here is an isolated passage that also occurs in the Sechet Shabbat, and almost all of the Rishonim up until the 12th century never used this particular reason at all. In other words, until the Talmud of the Baalei Tosafot, where the philosophy was that you have to reconcile all possible passages in the Talmud, when you had, and this is a point that Rabbi Soloveitchik makes in his new book, by the way, I'm told that this book is available in the Israel bookstore, so then we would make good use of it in the next few weeks. So the point that Professor Soloveitchik makes in his book is that this particular passage in the Gemara is not cited at all of the discussion of the laws of Yanin Esa until the time of Baalei Tosfot. The reason being, essentially, that prior to the time of Rashi, if you had a principal discussion, and then some places scattered elsewhere in the Talmud where something was discussed, but only in passing, those passages were not considered to be too relevant. One of the functions of the Baalei HaTosafot was to reconcile all possible passages in all possible situations, and from their time on, this passage assumed a role. But it's a bit confusing because, after all, what is the definition of non-Jewish wine according to this principle? Is it, as you say, not drinking wine in their house, or is it wine which was owned by a non-Jew? In other words, suppose you had a non-Jewish wine store which had Jewish wine. In other words, how seriously are you going to take this prohibition? Does it involve wine with which a non-Jew never came into physical contact? In other words, if the definition of the prohibition was physical contact because the main source of the prohibition was libation, then you would still need physical contact, even for this particular prohibition, which is presumably based on, which is explicitly based on social intercourse.
You transgress a bit from this. So what about beer?
What about beer?
I mean, can you have a beer with a guard? I mean, you said why you're not supposed to drink with a guard because it might lead to sexual mixing or something. What about beer?
Yeah, we should discuss.
I mean, you can get drunk on beer too.
That's right, or on whiskey. Right. We'll discuss all of these things, I hope. Let's just take this particular issue one at a time. Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm sure it does. Is nothing wrong there? Okay, let's take a look at the next few pages, which I handed out. Yayin shenitnaseh lakum. Wine which has actually, this is the Rambam, wine which has been used as a libation, asur bahanaya, you're not allowed to derive any benefit from it, v'hoshetem imenu kol shehu, and if you drink even a small amount of it, lokeh min ha-Torah. V'chein ha-ochel kol shehu mitakrovet akum, my page 4, the 5 now, מבשר או מפירות, אפילו מים ומלח, ההוכל מהם כל שהוא לוקה, שנאמר, אשר חלב זבחנו יוכלו, ישתו יין נסיכה. יין שנסיך לה כזבח שקרב לה, וכיוון שאיסור זה משום עקום הוא, אין לו שיעור, שנאמר בעבודת כוכבים, ולא ידבק לכל באומה מן אחר. That's the prohibition against using wine which has actually been used as a libation. Yayin ha'akum, wine of a non-Jew, she'ein anu yodin in et naseh or lo et naseh, we don't know whether a libation is performed with it or not, v'hu anikra stam yeinam, asur v'hanalak kamo yayin shen et naseh. It's prohibited to derive any benefit from it, just like wine which has actually been used as a libation. V'davar zeh nigzerat sofrim. But this is a rabbinical prohibition. V'hoshoshtem nistam yeinam revi'it. And if you drink wine of a non-Jew which you don't know was actually used as a libation, then if you drink a 4 or 5 ounces of it, makin oto makat marut. V'chol yayin sheyiga bo ha'akum, any wine with an non-Jew has touched, hareza asur shema nasachot. It's prohibited because there might have been a libation, shema shevata akum lavodot kachovim, olamarata sheyayin Yisrael, Jewish wine, shenagabo ha'akum dino kistam yenon hu sheasur vosheru asur. Okay. Now, this is all in the Perek Yud Aleph Mehilchot Ma'acholot Asurot of the Rambam, where he deals with the laws of Yayin Nesach. And there he doesn't mention at all this issue of social intercourse. But much later on, in Perek Yud Zayin, he writes, V'yesh sham dvarim acherim asru otam chachamim, my page 6, afal pi שאין לאיסורם איכה מן התורה, גזור אליהם כדי להתרחק מן העקום עד שלא יתערבו בהם ישראל ויודעו לידי חתנות. That there should not be social interaction because that may lead to intermarriage. ואלו הם, אסרו לשתות עמהם אפילו במקום שאין לחוש ליין נסף. One is prohibited to drink with them even in places where libations are not necessary, where there should may not be any danger of יין נסף. ויאסור לאכול פיתן ובישולון, ואפילו מקום שאין לחוש לגילותם. כיצד לא ישתה אדם במסיבת של עובדי כוכבים, ואף על פי שהוא יין מבושל שאינו נאסר, או שהוא שותה מכליו לבדו, ואם היה רוב המסיבה ישראל מותר. ואין שותין שיכר שלהם, you don't drink their beer, שעושים מן התמרים והתמינים כיוצא בהם, ואינו אסור אלא במקום מכירתו. You only just can't drink it in the bar. אבל אם הביא השיכר לביתו ושתו שם מותר שיקח הגזירה שמא יסעוד אצלו. Now let's just briefly turn to a little quote that I have from the Taz, and he'll quote Yayin Nesach, where he deals with this question of Rashi, which seems to indicate that there's a prohibition against Yayin Mubushal or Chometz as far as drinking is concerned, it's just that you're allowed to derive benefit from it. It's mutar bahana basur shtiya. He writes near that place on the right hand side which I have marked, my page 7. Ela pashut de la rashi, kol masha ba machmat yayin, any wine product, such as vinegar or cooked wine, afal pisha haka halachatam yayin, machmat shanase chometz, or eza tarovet, lo mahani lishtiya im nagabo oveit kochavim. Doesn't become prohibited if an undue touches it. So again, I'm emphasizing here that Rashi still, that according to Vitaz, Rashi would still require touch in order to make the wine prohibited. With all this as a background, I now want to go on to the... They always were. It was the main source of income for Jews in Poland for 3 or 4 centuries. Liquor, not non-Jewish wine. But actually, we will see to what extent Jews were involved in the manufacture, production, and sale of wine when we investigate what the actual facts are on the ground were in the 11th, 12th, and 13th century. And this is the main point that Professor Soloveitchik makes in his new book, and that is that the major trade in Northern Europe during this period was in fact in wine. And if you look at, maybe I should get the map beneath that.
I saw similar signs in New York where there were more like appeals that said, don't boycott kosher French wine, it only drinks French Jews, you don't have enough trouble. And,
so, the problem is, and that's what we will discuss, I hope, next week and thereafter, because I want to go into detail with the material that's in Professor Soloveitchik's book, is that in Europe, in the 10th or 11th or 12th century, on the one hand, there was no libation. The wine was used for sacramental purposes in the Mass, in the church, but people would not automatically perform a libation the way they did in the time of the Talmud or in the lands of Persia, even at the time of the 10th or 11th century. No. Where? Oh, I'm talking about Germany and France and those
regions.
Right, but not in the areas of Jewish settlement. Not in the areas of Jewish settlement. Secondly, this prohibition, wine was not a major item of commerce in the hot countries. You couldn't really transport wine efficiently because it would spoil. Whereas wine was the principal item of commerce in the areas of France and Germany where there was Jewish settlement. I mean, the amount of wine that was actually drunk was enormous. I mean, some places in certain monasteries and where you have lists of what a person is entitled to, you see people are entitled to 16 liters a day of wine. Even within Jewish households.
That's why they didn't live very long.
Well, we may disagree on that.
But they have lived well, but right. They didn't live long.
And in Jewish households, certainly 1 liter per day per person was the norm. It was considered an insult to drink water, and beer was considered sort of a lower level thing. And therefore, for that reason, and for, because of the fact that the main wine-growing places were along the Rhine River, where you have easy form of transport into the northern countries, in fact, viticulture was the principal export business, in fact, the principal item of commerce during all of these periods. Now, to summarize in brief, just by looking at this map, what was going on. So on the one hand, you had the fact, the reasons that were given in the Gemara for the prohibition against commerce or profit from non-Jewish wine didn't seem to apply. Secondly, whereas this prohibition was not of any economic significance, but only a social significance at the time of the Talmud, in northern Europe, where there was Jewish settlement, this had an enormous economic consequence. And thirdly, we can see from this map that the principal areas of wine-growing areas in these regions and the principal areas of Jewish settlement, getting blanker as you go along, it's running out of toner. Well, all right. I'm sorry. I'll have better maps, perhaps I'll make some more later for next week. You can see that there's just an almost a complete overlap between areas of Jewish settlement and areas of wine growing. So this will lead us into the historical question as to what extent this prohibition was in fact carried out, observed in practice, and how and why it was observed or modified in practice. But tonight I want to deal with a more mundane question, which was we opened up last week, which was, is the issue of grape juice. Is it or is it not prohibited to drink Welch's grape juice, or do you have to drink Kedem grape juice?
What about grape soda?
Or grape soda, which is probably mostly artificial. Maybe not from grapes at all. Okay. All right, so let me look at my page 8. This I'm going to read from two Tshuvot of Moshe Feinstein. Uvidvar mitz anavim, on the issue of grape juice, shekorin grape juice, grape juice, na'ashena'asa al-yedei akum, which is produced by non-Jews, yesha osim ze al-yedei shemavashlit chila et anavim, they first cook the grapes, va'az ein baze yisur diyayin hushal, ein bo mishum yayin nesa. Since the grapes are cooked prior to the extraction of the juice from the grapes, or prior to the separation of the juice from the mash, there's no prohibition.
When the mash
is still mixed, the grapes and the juice is still mixed together. Umimela huadin kishabishlu et anavim, ve'elu she'en vashlim et anavim, those who don't cook the grapes, asur hamitz, then the juice is prohibited. V'akshem vashlim et mitzachar kach, v'kevan v'kvar ne'esa lo utar al yedayin v'ishur. V'lachein tzarich lakor eich osim. So you have to investigate at the factory how it's produced. V'im hafik factory meshiv v'chtav, if the factory gives you a letter, Mistaber the Yeshla Haminam, presumably you can believe what they tell you when they give you their answer. Kevandu Yisur Midrabanan, because this is only a rabbinical prohibition. Velismoch, Delo Ma'ari Nafshayim. And they would not cause themselves to get into trouble by telling you a lie. Veyeshlishol Ve'ofen Shelo Yedu Shiyesh Chiluk L'dina. You should ask the question in such a way that they would not know that there's a difference as far as the law is concerned, and therefore promote sales by giving a false answer. Okay, so that's the first of these two tshuvot. I want to come to the second tshuva, which is more detailed. B'dvar mitz me'anavim adumim shemitbashel tchila yachad em achatzanim v'hazagim, which is cooked together with the skin and the flesh and everything. Kodem shenim shachayayim. Im yesh baza ezuch shash isu. Is there any prohibition? This was written in 1972. Hine, בדבר המצה הנעשה מענבים אדומים, מינים מסוים, juice that's made from red grapes of a certain type, שנעשה כדי להשתמש בו להדים מיני אוכלים ומשקים, הרוצים שיהיו בהם מראה הדמיניות, והוא רוצה גם להדים יין בהם, ותחילת העשייה, they used as a color additive and also to color the wine, ותחילת העשייה היא, the beginning of the production is, שמכניסים את השקולות הענבים במכונה סגורה, the grapes are placed into a closed machine, ונדרכים שם, ומשם נשטפו הענבים הדרוכים יחד עם מזגים והחצנים למכונת בישול, then they flow into a cooking machine, ומתבשלים יחד בחום של יותר מקופתי מעלות, they're cooked at a temperature higher than 180 degrees Fahrenheit, ואחר הבישול מועבר הכל גם כן שלא בידי אדם לגיגית שחומה, לגיגית שחומה הוא קוף ממעלות, it goes into a pot which is at 140 degrees, לשמונה שעות, for about 8 hours, ושם נעשה הפרדה מן המיץ ובין הזגים והחצנים. And there the juice is separated from the grapes residue. ואחר כך הולך המיץ שלא על ידי אדם למכונת בישול אווירי בחום של ריזה עם המעלות, and therefore it goes into a hot air cooking procedure for 175 degrees, עד שנשאר רק רבע מכמותו. Only a quarter of its volume is left. Inay pashut shel chom shel kuf pei ma'alot. V'gam pachot ma'at, a heat of 180 degrees, and perhaps an even a little less, hu bishul mamash. It's definitely cooking. Shelo na'aseh shuv yayin nesach. V'lachain, kevan sh'abishul haya od mikodem shenifrar hayayin min apsolah. Since the cooking took place before the wine was separated from the residue, לא נאסר, אף אם היה איזה מקום שאפשר לאדם לגע בהם, even if there were a place where there could be some human contact. וכל שכן, and certainly שלפי התעשייה, according to the mode of production, לא שייך שיגע בהם יד אדם. It's not possible that a person would come into physical contact with it. So therefore, Rav Moshe is giving two reasons to permit this wine. One, that it was cooked prior to the separation of the juice from the grapes. And secondly, the whole production method is automated, and therefore there's no way that a non-Jew is going to actually come in physical contact with this juice. And if you're thinking that you should worry that maybe a non-Jew will open one of the pipes so that he can actually come in physical contact with the juice, ain shum tam lachush laze. There's no reason to worry about this. Shelo laharviach ain choshishin klal kemufurash b'tosfot of the Zohar daf yud beis amud bet. Okay. It really doesn't matter. He's just dealing with the actual problem.
But then,
with
this wine, you need to have an hashkacha, or can you?
Why?
Any supervision? It doesn't need any.
No.
When I was speaking to someone about this, suppose something dreadful into the wine is the happy. Is the hashkacha, how can you trust the
Suppose the mouth doesn't see it happen?
Yeah, I don't know. It's conceivable that a mouse might fall into
the wine. All the time anyway.
Right. It's conceivable that a mouse might fall into the machinery, but unlikely. Okay. Aval. כיוון שיש בתי תעשייה, since there are certain factories שלפני ההפרדה מבשלים רק בקופני מעלות, שאין בזה חשיבות בישול, אך שיש עדיין לסמוך על מה שאחר ההפרדה מבשל בכל שמות עיני מעלות, ולא היה המיץ במקום גלוי שיכול להנפי בו, וכנראה שחושש קרואתו, שמא יש איזה מקום שהמיץ גלוי, הנה אם יש בכאן איש בקי שמכיר ב...
If a person can establish that there was no physical contact, he's certainly to be
believed. And now the bottom paragraph, Umidat hachom le'inyam le'tchashev yayin mugushal, the degree of temperature for which the wine should be construed as yayin mugushal, pashutu shebriyat soledet, it could be hot enough so that there would be a reflex reaction. If you stuck your hand in it, you would, by reflex, pull your hand out. Hot enough so that you would be burned. Ach shaloma ale ratichut, even though the wine is not bubbling, even though there is no boiling taking place, 140. I don't know. When I sit in the jacuzzi, it's already 104. It's conceivable to me. Right. I don't know. I don't know where he got the number of degrees as 180. But then, okay. Ach shalom aler tichut yad soledet hu b'chashivut bishul l'chol adinim b'dar alach. The hand pulling away with a reflex is considered cooking as far as all liquids are concerned. Umasha katava shach simin kuf chav gimel sukan zayin dahayayin shiit ma'et mi b'datol yedei richa. Pashut shabiyayit soledet kvar nitma'et mashu. That once the wine has become so hot that there will be a reflex reaction, some amount of the volume will decrease. Hu ba'erech kuf ayin he amarot l'chumra. And we can, l'chumra, we should make it 175 degrees. So here's a clear heter that one is allowed to drink juice which has been produced in a fully automated fashion, and especially if, which is the mode of production in the Welsh grape juice companies, for example, where it's cooked while it's still in a mixture with the grapes.
Okay.
Moshe Feinstein. Both of these two that we've just read is a Shuvah Rav Moshe. And I've been trying to ask old timers, and I reconfirmed with Rabbi Siegel that in the 50s, and before the advent of Mr. Herzog, with his marketing skills, people used to drink regular grape juice. But Raviva doesn't remember, and I don't remember.
Well, thank you.
That's another of the marketing skills of Mr. Herzog. Yes, you can make Kiddush with it. We make Kiddush with it. The Meiri says that you do make a Boer Dreg Dachon. The Rambam says no, but our custom is to make Kiddush with grape juice.
No,
I
don't know that with
Welsh. Huh? Much easier now because we have a Mashgiach watching the whole procedure from the beginning to the end. That time was no Mashgiach, so who had to do it by himself and make it kosher and everything.
Yeah, sure. In Europe, you didn't have this. Grape juice did not exist before Dr. Welch. I'm reminding you that
Dr. Welch...
Presumably. Although we didn't use it. I mean, the idea of making Kiddush and grape juice is also a marketing skill of Mr. Herzog. But remember, Dr. Welch... Welch was a dentist in New Jersey, and this was towards the end of the 19th century, after Pasteur. So that he realized that by pasteurizing the mash, he could prevent fermentation, and then if he put it into closed bottles, the way Pasteur did in his experiments, proving that there's no such thing as artificial generation. Spontaneous generation, his motives were because everybody believed that drinking alcohol was bad for you. That was at the time when prohibition was being thought of or being enacted, and the wine was part of the sacrament in the church, so he had this brilliant invention that they could replace the sacramental wine in the church by grape juice. That was his motivation. So, in fact, it had a ritual origin.
But not libation.
Okay.
What was the Rambam's position? Or you mentioned it, but what was the Rambam?
About what?
Rambam went into philosophy and physics and mathematics, and how do you feel about all this?
Well, I just read what he said. He's reporting the laws as a summary from the Talmud, the way he studied them. Now let's read the contrary position. That's my page 10. So
So we've read the Trivus of Moshe Feinstein, according to which there's no prohibition against using grape juice, provided that the juice is manufactured automatically, that is, without human contact after the juice has been separated to any degree from the grapes, and especially if it's been cooked to the degree which of 175 or 180 degrees. How he got those exact numbers, I can't say, but that was his job. So
according to Moshe Feinstein, there are products like their juices that have substrate juice added to them.
Sweetener.
Would that be permitted? Sure. But you take a look at the OU. The OU will give, say, a Tropicana juice, so it's pure orange juice, so pure orange, pineapple, and OU.
Right. They did not rely on Rabbi Moshe Feinstein's truth. On the other hand, I think I mentioned this last week, I asked Rabbi Reuven Feinstein, Moshe's son, I see him in shul when I got him in the morning in New York, what about drinking some of these juices, which have grape juice and so he said, if someone would drink, but I wouldn't call him a sheik. That was his response. Okay? Now, let's see the contrary. So here is a situation in which what seems to be an obvious halachic permission has not been accepted by the OU or by the Jewish community, but this is something which I think really is due to the marketing skills of Mr. Herzog. Okay, but let's at least read what the opposite opinion is. Be'inyan Yayin Nesach, my page 10.
Whose response is this?
Rab Tzvi Pesach Frank from Jerusalem. Nish'alti mirav echad v'yatzot avrit al Beit Charoshet shel Notzrim. I was asked by a rabbi in the United States about a factory, non-Jewish factory, shel Sim Sham Yayin, where they make wine. But ta'asiyat ha'yayin hu derech zo. This is the mode of manufacture. Menichim ha'anavim al gabei reshet. They put the grapes on a
grid.
Shebekoch ha'chashmal sovev holech ha'over tchila derech brechat mayim. It first goes, so it's a moving operation, a production line. It first goes through a water source, kedei lenakotam, so it's washed off. Umisham over hareshet im hanavim letoch mechona la'afrir hasvigim mehanavim, and then it goes into a machine which removes the stems from the grapes. Umin hamechona yotzei hareshet im hanavim levad. So now the stems have been removed and the grapes alone are going. Until the grapes fall into a pot, until it falls into a pot which is on the fire. Then the grapes leave the pot after they're cooked. And if they fall on a table, a press goes down on them, called Sham V'Sochtan, V'Yayin Nizchal Min HaShulchan L'Toch HaVreicha Miyuchedet L'Tikzat HaYayin, and then falls into a pool constructed for this purpose. V'Sha'ela Ba'a Im Yayin Zeh Mutar. And the question is this wine permitted? So again, a completely automated process. V'Hinei Rav Echad Hikilem, and a certain rabbi permitted this. This Rav Echad, of course, is the Rav Moshe Feinstein. Insulted way of referring to him. V'hinei rav echad hekil lahem v'horah sh'ayayin hazeh, this wine, sh'lo nagabo yad nachri ela la'achar sh'nifashel, so there was no contact by a non-Jew until after it was cooked, mital Yisrael, mepnei sh'al yayin mevushal lo gazru la'osro mishon yayin hazeh. There was no prohibition enacted by the rabbis to prohibit cooked wine. U'leda'ati yesh lefakteh b'zeh. But according to my opinion, one should question this. Shemi lashon haRambam haTor vaShulchan Aruch yodea shekatfu haHeter shel Yayin Mevushal lagabei Yayin Yisrael v'nagabo Akol. The
permission to use cooked wine that was is talking about Jewishly owned wine, which a non-Jew came in contact with. Mashma shedavka b'yayin Yisrael u'negiyat ha'akum hitiru b'mushal. Meaning that only Jewishly owned wine, which a non-Jew came in contact with, is permitted. But not ordinary wine which belongs to a non-Jew. The reasons are explained because of a question that the Rosh asked. Sheikh Sheh, just because the wine has been cooked, has the prohibition of social intercourse been removed? Only according to Jewishly owned wine which a non-Jew touches. Because there the prohibition of social intercourse doesn't apply. Sharei ha'yayin shel Yisrael, because the wine belongs to the Jew. V'leka gzeira mishum benotehem, ela b'sfam yeinam shehayayin shel ha'akum. Ha'yayin shel Yisrael u'magakum, but in the case where the wine is owned by a Jew and it is merely touched by a non-Jew, kol ha'isuru mishum shemachshevet ahor kochim l'avadozora v'chayshin en shemen tisechota. V'kol yayin shiigab l'akum reizah asur shemen asachoto shemachshevet ha'akum l'avadat kochavim. Because tav din zeh b'halacha nifredet midin sfam yinam shekatva b'halacha shel ranei Hashem itam ha'gzeira shel benotehem. V'chein mashma midivrei hatur b'shem rosh da'gzeira mishum benotehem lo shayach ela b'sfam yinam shel akum aval lo b'yayin shisrael v'negiyat akum. Shevi b'shem ha'gaonim, he brought a source from the gaonim, shebizman hazeh ein yisur hana'a b'magash ha'nafi b'yayin shelanu. There's no prohibition against Jewish, non-Jewish contact in our wine. The Nachrim v'zman hazeh einu gilim naseh v'chul. V'adelni avi harash herich bo. V'siyum dvara v'tamim halonu maspikim v'magan nachri v'yayin shalom. That applies to our wine, Jewish wine, in which a non-Jew touched. Avol b'stam yeinam sh'asru b'hana'ah mishum b'notehem. But ordinary wine, which was prohibited, he says, "Ba'anah," but it doesn't make any sense. Mishum benotehem ein tam lihitatiro ad kam l'shono. V'chein ra'iti b'chidushei Rabbi Akiva Eiger shekatav b'pshitut shebemaga akum lo shayach mishum benotehem ve'evi raya mimaga ger toshav shemutav b'shtiyah v'yeno asur b'shtiyah. So, in summary, what he's saying is that there is a separate prohibition about social intercourse, and for some strange reason, which of course makes no sense at all, this should apply to bottled grape juice that's manufactured by non-Jews. So I've read the gist of his argument, my time has run out, the gist of his argument was that there are two separate prohibitions, and the prohibition against social intercourse would apply to grape juice which is manufactured by a non-Jewish manufacturer, and therefore we would not be allowed to drink it.
He says because the Mevushal only applies to Jewish wine.
Right.
But there's another reason that it's all aromatic and no going touched it.
Right.
So but what about that?
Well, you can equally say that if there wasn't indeed a separate prohibition, then that would not involve touching because it now originates from
touching doesn't matter.
Now what about these gourmet wedding, where you may have non-Jewish waiters pouring.
Well, they're assuming that all of that wine is Yayin Mevushal, this wine that's been cooked, pre-cooked.
So sometimes they serve it with a casting
around the bottle. No,
yeah.
But
you know. Yeah, because it should be the fine wine that's served
on that. Now, is there an issue with the vision as well, with it looking at it?
No, no.
That's just more nonsense.
Right. Okay, so, of course, on this issue, it seems clear to me that Moshe Feinstein's position is the correct one, but it's not been accepted by the Jewish community.
It wasn't strong enough.
Right.
Because of Kedem wine?
Yeah, because of Kedem wines. I mean, he was really a marketing genius, Mr. Herzog.
He also has a good product.
He has a good product. But he's now produced the need for having wine with grape juice with a hefsher, which is probably some innovation in the 1960s.
And as you say, you cannot drink a cranberry raspberry juice because the main component of it is in fact grape juice, and therefore it's prohibited according to our current standards of OU. Okay, so this was a bit amusing, but showing you that how prohibitions can really change within at least my lifetime, from a logical position which Moshe Feinstein took to the more severe prohibition. And now I would like to spend the next couple of weeks going through the material in this brand new book that just came out this year of Professor Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, which is called Gehinnom. And Jonathan bought a copy at the Israel bookstore, he told me, so therefore there was at least one copy available. And we will meet next week as well, going to New York for Thanksgiving this year. But I won't be meeting much after that because on the 16th of December we're planning to go to Israel. So we will have a few more shiurim until, so I guess that's 1, 2, 3